A fault is a weakness, a defect, a fracture. Faults divide, tear, and consume. Here in the city of Chester's Chasm, we struggle to maintain that precarious balance over the precipice and the earth, in our lives and in our hearts. This story is about four teenagers with faults of their own.
The fault between my faith and freedom.
The fault between my family and identity.
The fault between my choice and my obligation.
The fault between my life and death.
As these fractures grow, we stand at the edge and ask, what must we sacrifice to sate the void's endless hunger? Is it possible that the answer lies within all our faults?
Greetings, and welcome to All Our Faults, a Monster Hearts 2 actual play podcast. I am so glad you're here. If this is your first time with us, my name is Mistress Winter, and I am your humble MC and host. In Monster Hearts, there are four guidelines that groups should follow to maximize their collaborative storytelling experience. They are: make each main character's life not boring, say what the rules demand, say what honesty demands, and keep the story feral. To the last, keeping things feral means to allow the story to go where it takes you naturally. Attempting to plan out the arc, to manipulate the scenes, or to force the story in a particular direction diminishes the potential for a more climactic resolution. The story becomes manufactured, and unexpected opportunities vanish. This art imitates life. It can seem that no matter how much you plan and draft out your own personal story, life has an inherent wildness that will never be tamed, and will laugh in the face of your plans just before it shatters them. That's been my recent experience anyway. It may be better then to use this art to inform our lives. By keeping your story feral, you have a greater chance not to only survive, but to thrive in ways that you may never have considered. As our teens will find out, things are getting pretty feral at the back-to-school bash. The night started out with interpersonal drama and contention between our yearbook group. Celine was still mad at Crispin, and Crispin was jealous of Jacob hanging on Celine, and Michael shut down Barbara and fed on Jacob. But further chaos erupts when an attack outside the party is reported, leaving the teens to wonder who might be in danger and what the source of that danger is. Content warnings for this episode include mild descriptions of gore and death. Shoutouts and thank yous after the show. Please enjoy. Chapter 10, Bash It On, Part 2. Where's Crispin during all of this?
Crispin has been, quote-unquote, minding his own business, but has also been, like, keeping an eye on Celine after he so dramatically mic-dropped on her. Does Crispin hear the scream as well?
Hears the howl, yeah.
Okay. Being, I believe, the only non-supernatural member of our crew, his first instinct is to look to Celine, but seeing that Bert and Michael are with her, he will pursue the sound.
You'll pursue the sound outside.
Yeah, I'm feeling feisty. I'm feeling good. Everything's coming up Millhouse. Let's go.
The rest of the crew sees Crispin rushing out the door just before the faculty get that notice.
Okay, I am going to move Celine over to Michael because he's got a hold on her. And I'm just like, okay, y'all get where you need to go. I need to go check this out, and I want to charge towards the door as well. But we will talk about this later.
I would start pulling towards the door because I saw Crispin go towards the door. So unless, Michael, you decide to, like, hold me in place, I'm going towards Crispin.
I am actually going to try to hold her in place.
I'm going to attempt to fight you on that. It's not going to be at first very strong. I think that if I just struggle a little bit, you'll let me go.
You can do this a couple of different ways. You can, if you have any strings, you can pull one.
I don't.
The other options are to run away or lash out physically.
Oh, you know what? I have the move, Cornered Rat. When you feel like you have nowhere to go, give yourself the condition Trapped. While you have this condition, you add one to lash out physically. So I definitely feel trapped right now.
Question. I have a string on everyone. Could I possibly use that string that I have on Celine?
You can, absolutely. When you spend a string, you can either tempt them to do what you want, give them a condition, add plus one to your roll against them, or add one to the harm you deal them if you deal harm.
I would like to simultaneously try to shut her down.
Okay. So this is going to be a bit of a roll off in that case. So, Celine, if you will give me a volatile, and Michael, you'll roll shut someone down with your bonuses as well. So, cold.
Just a volatile roll?
You're lashing out physically, right?
Yeah, I got a 10.
So did I.
Oh! What does that mean?
Well, both of them are going to be successful. On the lash out physically, a 10 and up, you deal harm, and they choke up momentarily before they can react. To resolve that, whatever method you use to attack Michael, you're going to get away. Simultaneously, Michael, since you succeeded, you can either gain another string on Celine, give Celine a condition, or take one forward. That may result in Celine hesitating in running away, but I will let the two of you resolve that.
I will take a string on Celine. Tell me what you do. I know what I'm going to do in response to you lashing out.
How are you holding me?
Because I had your wrist. I was going to try holding on to your wrist.
I think I claw at your hand with my nails. I feel like there's some fey stuff. I'm different, and I kind of like the idea of my nails being just a little different. Everything about me is a little different, and so it would leave some scratch marks, and simultaneously, like, as I scratch you, I yank my arm away and spin to run, but I will stop there depending on what you do.
Have we established that silver is bad for vampires?
We have not yet.
I decided that iron is bad for Fae.
I forget that sometimes silver is bad for vampires. I never think of that. We can go with that. I'm fine with that.
In that case, Celine, your skin, your very person is kind of infused with a natural quicksilver almost.
Ooh, I like that.
So when your nails bite into Michael, they really bite in because they overcome his vampire weakness. And that comes as a bit of a surprise to you as well, Michael, watching your skin just flay open.
I'm probably the only other person in the entire fucking school who could probably understand. For Christ's sake, I'm trying to help.
That will make me freeze upon, like, mid about to run away, and I will whip my head back and just, how could you possibly understand?
As you probably see, my wrists start to knit themselves up, and I just ate two. Then if you're frozen, you don't know what I'm going to do. If you're willing to come along with me, I will walk up to you and grab your wrist and pull you off to the side where no one can see us.
Yeah, honestly, I think at this point, I don't even have the capacity to understand what I just saw with what's going on outside. So I think my shock at what I've just seen will overpower my worry for Crispin right now.
And then the second I get you alone, I need to heal a fucking harm. I bite your fucking neck and drain you of some blood.
Is Fey blood different?
Beyblood is different.
So, again, with the feeding, I can choose two things. So I choose to heal a harm, so my wrists are perfectly healed. And you definitely don't die.
Thanks. I really appreciate that.
I think I'm going to need a lash out physically.
Okay. Okay, that's not great. That's going to be a fail no matter what. I just want to know how bad it is. That is a 3.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a complete fail. So, Celine, how do you avoid slash escape this situation?
So, the head of my father's guard, Naradia, I know her. It's not the first time I've met her. She calls me kid. We clearly know each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think from time to time when I've been in the Fae, she's taught me a thing or two sometimes. And one of those things, just on account of me being a princess in the Fae realm, was some minor self-defense tactics. So I think I would employ one of those currently to get myself out of this situation. And I think I would go and knee Michael in the balls.
Oh!
You had to be trained from the captain of the Fae Guard to learn that move?
No. What I do to get away from his neck, from him coming at my neck, I don't know what I do. I do something to get away and push him back slightly. And then, as a extra fuck you, I will knee him in the balls.
Go ahead and give me a lash out physically.
A 9 again.
On a 9, you do harm, but you choose one of the following. They learn something about your true nature and gain a string on you. I decide how bad the harm turns out, or you become your darkest self.
I think I'll enter my darkest self.
Cool.
Celine, you've entered into your darkest self. You are surrounded by predators, and they are closing in. One almost got you. So you are taking off as fast as you can, trying to find somewhere, anywhere safe. And you run out into the night. We will figure out where you're going later. Crispin and Bert, the two of you have rushed outside at differing times. Crispin, you will arrive on the scene first. Even as the person who warned everyone is attempting to sprint back with the faculty, and you see a mutilated body in the parking lot.
Is it anyone I know?
We'll get to that in a second. Even as you approach, you can see dark stains growing along the asphalt. This is fresh. And somewhere beyond the line of cars, you see a pair of blue flaming eyes watching you before this massive mound of fur darts away. Bert, you will arrive on scene a few minutes later and find Crispin standing over the ravaged body of Jacob.
First, I'm going to just run up and put my hand on Crispin's shoulder. And I'm like, hey, are you all right? Celine said something about something was attacking and she named you as one of the people that could be in danger. You good? What's going on? And then I look down and I'm like, oh God.
I'm fine. There was something. I think Crispin is still trying to piece together. The flaming eyes are haunting him. And I know this is going to go bad. Can I gaze into the abyss?
Sure. What are you looking for?
I want to think back and I want to see if there's anything I remember in the lore, my faith that my father has taught me about a creature like this. It's going to be a 2.
Nothing stands out in terms of this fringe Christian sex lore or mythology, however the outside world wants to view it. The only thing that tugs at your mind is the research you recently did on Fenrir.
I totally forgot about that. You're right.
I also want to gaze into the abyss and kind of like use my detective skills and just try to like case the area. What happened? What's going on?
Okay, go ahead and give me your dark.
That is an 8.
It's unclear what kind of animal would have done this. The size of the wounds would suggest bear, but the claws more resemble wolf. It looks like Jacob was heading to his car. You can see his key fob now soaked in his blood on the ground, having dropped it in the attack.
All right, I'm just going to take all that in real quick. I might like flip to the back of my quote notebook and write some of these notes down, and then just kind of look at Crispin, and I'm like, did you see anything? This wasn't you, was it? Like, you didn't...
Does this look like something a person could do?
I don't know. A lot of weird things are happening tonight, okay? The food went bad. I don't know. Celine was like sick.
What are you talking about? The food went bad and now someone looks like they've been ripped apart by a bear?
Those are the two things. Like, I hold up my notebook. Like, those are the only two things I have written down here as far as the investigation, okay? Like, I'm piecing it together. But yeah, I don't know. The food went bad and then we heard a scream and then we went to talk to Celine and she was like, oh no, Crispin. And I was like, what does he have to do with anything? And then I rushed after you and...
I think hearing her name and that she was concerned about him, he'll go, wait, Celine, where is she?
She's in there, I think, with Michael. She was about to, like, faint or something. I just ran after you to make sure you're okay. I don't know anything about this. What's going on?
I don't know. I literally just got here and there was a dog and I will describe in minute detail. It was, I don't know, it was huge and had these eyes, these flaming blue eyes and it stared at me as I was standing here and I don't understand what's happening or this is crazy. This is crazy. This is what crazy people do.
A big dog? Is that normal? Is there big dogs around here? I've only lived here a year, so I don't know what the local flora and fauna is like out here, but there's a giant dog just out?
I need to go home. I need to go home right now.
Okay.
And Crispin is going to take off. Probably for the first time, like with speed, he's going to take off for his house and his father's study.
Okay. Not 10 minutes later, the sirens have since... roared down the street, skidded into the student parking lot, and a collection of cops and paramedics have cordoned off the immediate area around the body. Bert, what are you doing?
Bert is kind of in the rush of everything, not really understanding his role or like what he's supposed to be doing. So he's like on the side of like hey, like, back up, give us some room. Everyone take a step back, not realizing that like he is also just a bystander in this situation. So just trying to like helping and just like looking at like officers and everything, just like, oh man, another one, what's going on in this city? Like he's fully in control, which he is absolutely not.
Several members of the JROTC school program gather up on one of the police officers that are holding the crime scene. And after a brief conversation, the students mark points along the perimeter, standing at parade rest, hands behind the small of their back, legs slightly apart, keeping back the mob as best as they can, assisting the authorities. Michael, where did you go after Celine ran?
I think the initial shock of being hit probably reminded me what the hell I was doing. And after the initial anger, I might have gone to figure out where everyone went. And I would have followed the crowds to see what the commotion was. And maybe I would have found Bert.
Before you find Bert, William Harker finds him first.
Oh God.
This is very strange. There are no wild animals that I'm aware of in Chester's Chasm. And I haven't seen no reports of any escaping from the zoo?
Yeah, I'm looking back through my notes of recent happenings, and I don't see anything, escaped animals, any... Have you lived here long? Has this been a problem? Obviously not. You don't seem very... I mean, you seem very surprised that this is going on.
Oh, that's right. You're new here.
Yeah, I'm new here.
Yeah, I've lived here pretty much all my life. My dad is the city coroner.
Oh, interesting.
That's where dear Jacob is going to...
What happened?
Harker will hear the voice and slow turn, and you just see him flush.
Looks like an animal attack.
I like look at my notes and look at him, and I'm like, okay. And I'm like turning towards Michael. I'm not. I'm pointing to the JRTC kids. I'm like, I'm not with them. I'm doing my own thing.
Can I try to turn William on?
He's already halfway there, but sure.
Yeah, I just want lingering eye contact. I'm going to just stare him in the eyes, and I'll roll.
Okay.
An animal attack. Who was attacked? What by? I was inside. I lost track of time.
And I'm just going to lean in close.
Okay.
And closer and closer, keeping that eye contact. And I rolled. That's a 6 plus a 4, and I believe that is a total 12.
Very good. You gain a string on Harker. He tries to speak, and from your observations when you're stalking him, he has been eloquent and soft-spoken, but in this moment, he cannot get words to form properly.
And at that, Bert, did you see?
No, I ran out here with Crispin, and I'm like looking around like, oh, Crispin is gone. I was just taking some notes because I thought maybe, you know, something else might have happened. And I was just talking to William here, and he was saying it possibly was an animal, but he doesn't think so. We were just kind of just figuring it out, and then you popped up. So I don't know. He said he's dead. His dad's the coroner, and that's where Jacob is going.
If it's an animal, I don't think it's normal.
No. I agree. Perhaps a new strain of rabies, which would be bad.
It's Howl does things.
And I'm going to just surreptitiously put my hand on the small of William's back.
You can feel him start to melt at your touch.
Noted.
I think that I'm coming down with something. Yes, feverish, flushed.
Are you okay?
I don't think so. I'm going to go. It is going to be a long night for my dad, and I need to take care of things at home. Yeah, bye.
He walks away rather quickly.
Good night. Bert, did you get any glimpse of who was hurt or what the creature was? It's not an animal.
Oh, I thought you knew. It was Jacob. They found Jacob.
What?
Yeah. I thought that's why you rushed out here, because you knew it was Jacob. I thought it was Jacob.
I didn't kill him.
Whoa, I was not accusing you. That was a weird thing to say. Did something happen? Where's Celine? She was like passing out. That's why I passed her to you so I could see what's going on.
Let's take a walk.
Okay. Is everyone okay?
I have no clue, but, we should talk.
Okay. Yeah. This scene's kind of getting crowded. Can't really take too many notes, and clues are being disrupted, but yeah, we can head out.
Yes. So, the creature, when it howls, it triggers something in me and makes me need to feed. And there's something about Celine that makes me very hungry. I may have tried to feed.
Wait, did you feed on Celine?
I didn't, on her. She stopped me, thankfully. If the howling happens again, stop me from being alone with Celine, please. I don't want to murder that one. I like her.
Okay, I didn't know we murdered people. So, Celine's okay, I guess, just we need to keep you from her.
For now, we should go find her, though. And I should probably
not be there.
Apologize.
How far of a radius does things Hal have? Because I don't know if we should be apologizing and then you do something that would also be bad.
Well, that's buddy system. If you could help.
Right, but who did you feed on? You said you fed, but not on Celine.
Well, I told you I didn't kill him.
Jacob? When did you feed on Jacob?
A little while ago. I mean, he was such an asshole. I wanted to get him away from Celine. He was gonna... I don't know what he was gonna do to her.
And then you killed him?
No! That's the point. I told you I didn't. And now he's dead. I don't want to get caught.
Okay, I'm just saying, because you know, like, what my role is.
Yeah, duh. That's why
the life and death, and there is life, and there is death. And now I'm gonna have to, like, intervene somehow, I guess.
No, well, not with me.
No, not with you. I'm just saying to my bosses, my higher-ups. They're going to be like, hey, life and death happened, the cycle. What'd you do to end that? And I'm going to be like, well, I don't know if we're best friends anymore, but this person I know.
Well, that hurts.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, you just said you fed on somebody and they're dead. And you might kill...
Yeah, but I didn't do that. I didn't murder this time.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm just trying to figure it all out, okay? I'm just trying to figure out objectively where Bert is and then my Reaper stuff.
Whatever that is.
I think that plays a part into it now.
No, like...
yeah, you like take dead people. I don't know.
I mean, I'm supposed to, but I can't really like shepherd or ferry this guy because he's in pieces on the pavement there.
Well, yeah, and like all these people around, like it's weird, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I had to leave because I didn't want somebody to show up.
Okay, let's go
and be
find
like,
Celine. Like, let's go look for her.
Are you gonna be cool though? You gotta promise to be cool. You can't just be like the howling and then
again. That's just... why I have you. Okay, I'm gonna just gaze into the abyss and try to find Celine.
Okay.
I should have dice I can read more easily. That's a oh fuck. This is six.
You have completely lost Celine. You have lost Celine because of the overwhelming aroma of the blood that is spilled out onto the street. It is all that you can smell at this moment.
Yeah, I imagine I'm doing like the in Bram Stoker's Dracula, the creatures of the night, the sweet music they make, like that face. And I'm listening to the night trying to find her, and I just can't. I just can't figure out where she went.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, where do we go? You and I, we know we've got some supernatural stuff. Possibly Celine now. Maybe Crispin.
Do you know where he lives? Do you know where she lives?
Don't know where they live. I've only been here a year. Do you know where they live?
No.
Oh, okay. It's kind of a weird time to ask somebody.
Well, to find them, but okay. I think we're at an impasse. All right, we'll just have to talk to them tomorrow and hope they're not dead.
Yeah, I'm gonna go...
I will real quick point out that I believe you shared each other's information during your book club.
Oh, we did. Okay. Do I have, like, Celine's phone number?
Yes.
Okay. Then, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah?
Hold on a second. I'm going to pull out my phone, and I'm going to text Celine.
Maybe I should communicate with Celine. I don't know. You try to...
Well, we can both. Let's both.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
I'm going to text, hey, I'm sorry for trying to murder you. The howling thing made me really hungry. We should talk. I won't try to kill you. I will bring Bert for safety.
So you send this text. From behind you, you hear shouts of despair and glance back to see Taylor trying to rush the line of Jayrazi, trying to get to their friend who's being covered in a sheet and prepared for transport. We will zoom out of there. Celine, you went on the run. Where did you run to?
Yes, wonderful question. I think at first I wouldn't have any particular destination in mind. I would just be running. But I think subconsciously I'd be running towards home.
Home is quite a ways away. So the first place that you're aiming for is a city bus stop.
I'm in my darkest self.
Oh, that's right, you are.
And my darkest self reads, everything and everyone around you is a threat. There's no escape, not really. You can't do anything but run, and you'll deal appropriately with anyone who tries to stop you. You escape your darkest self when someone proves to you that they aren't dangerous, or when you run into something really dangerous. So... how long do I have to wait for the bus? And how many people are on the bus?
The bus comes around every 15 minutes. Looks like you're halfway through that. So you've got about 7 to 10 minutes.
Is there anyone at the bus stop with me?
Yes. There is an older woman who is sitting on the bench at the bus stop. She has a dirty apron folded up in her lap. And she steals... the occasional glance up at you.
Every time she looks at me, I will step farther away from her. I will keep, like, staring front, kind of looking around everywhere, but particularly pointedly looking at her and then, like, looking away to keep an eye on her. Because I am definitely in a state where she feels like a threat. The dirty apron with probably stains that from where I am, I definitely can't identify. And in this state of mind, definitely thinking nefarious. So I would just keep stepping like away from her, almost poised to just start running if the bus doesn't come soon.
Very cautiously, carefully, as if reading your heightened vigilance and anxiety, she reaches into a large bag and pulls out some Tupperware. Do you like pie, honey?
I'll just stare at her wide-eyed, and my backing away will increase, and I'll scurry away a few more steps. I'm probably, like, barely in the bus stop at this point, so to speak.
Suit yourself. I make a mean pecan.
I will just, like, squeak out. No, thank you. Is there a wall near me? I think I'd probably back myself into a literal wall.
Sure. You should really get more when you come to lunch. You always eat like a little bird.
I'm sorry, I don't recognize you. Am I supposed to?
Yeah, fear has that effect on us sometimes. Doesn't let us see what's right in front of our eyes. And you will recognize through the haze of the fear, the lunch lady from school.
Her knowing me and me recognizing her should make me feel better. But instead, it's almost frightening me more. And I'm almost scrambling back against the wall to see if I can move further back. But there is a solid wall behind me. But realization would wash over my face.
I don't think you're going to make it up that wall. And there are far scarier things up there, I'm sure.
Maybe, maybe not.
Are you all right?
Why are you asking?
You look a little harried.
Why do you need to know?
Kids who come to my counter every day, I like to take care of them. That's why I do what I do. So if I happen to meet one of you out in the wild, then I'm going to take care of you there too.
I am perfectly capable of taking care of myself. Thank you. And I will edge myself along the wall further away from her.
She will get the hint and take a bite of her pie as she waits for the bus. And when it pulls up, she neatly and swiftly puts away her dessert and heads for the bus.
How full is the bus?
It's a little bit later at night, so looks to be about a dozen people on a bus made for 30 or more.
I will dart ahead of her onto the bus and scurry to, like, the very back and, like, perch myself in a seat where my back is against the corner and I can see everyone, and I would definitely be looking around frantically. People would notice. People would definitely notice the strange girl with pointed ears and silver hair looking like she's psychotic, honestly.
Juanita will strategically place herself between you and the nearest person without sitting next to you, but she will not address you.
I will continue to look around frantically at everyone, especially those who are paying me glances, but the fact that Juanita is not addressing me, not looking at me, is starting to just slightly cut away at that fear that's so pervasive.
You will also find that the people around you will only get one or two glances your way before Juanita will scold them. You keep your eyes to the front. None of your business back here. And that's how it will be throughout the bus ride, to a point closer to your home.
When it gets to my stop, is Juanita still on the bus?
Yep.
I think throughout the bus ride, I will come down off the seat a little until I'm fully sitting in it, still looking around and, like, biting at my nails. Still definitely noticeably frantic, but a lot less so than when I first got on the bus. There would come a point that I would, before I get to my stop, probably the stop before it, I would slip into the seat next to Juanita. Still keeping, like, as much, like, I'm not definitely not touching her, even if that means I'm sitting on, like, the very edge of the seat, but I'd move to sit next to her.
She waits for you to engage first.
I would take a few deep breaths. The haze of the fear is finally going away as Juanita's comforting presence and protective presence starts to actually cut through. And I would just kind of play with my hair, look down, still biting my nails every now and then, and just, sorry for how I acted. I wasn't very kind to you. I apologize.
As I said, fear gets the better of us sometimes. Not to worry. I will still serve you the same mound portions I do every other kid. And if you're interested, I don't know if you like this kind of cuisine, but I also work here. She hands you a card. It is a Latino African fusion restaurant called Vid del Dia. You come in, I'll make sure you get a free app.
I will definitely take it from her and give her the faintest of smiles and just I'll try. Thank you.
Have a good night.
And I will scurry off the bus at my stop. Still freaked out from the events of the night, but I think fully out of my darkest self and not trying to sprint away from everything and everyone. But I do think it's left its mark.
Of course. As you get off the bus, you hear your phone chime, reminding you of messages. And you will see that you have a text from Michael.
I also would like it noted that the hunter again has four strengths on me.
Getting close.
I will glance around, definitely checking my surroundings. I don't want to be in any type of situation where I'm not paying attention again. When the coast is clear, as I'm walking slowly and close to the wall, I will take out my phone and check the message that I got.
Okay. You will read Michael's message, and we'll come back to how you respond to it shortly. Crispin, did you drive?
So, no, Crispin did not drive. He's not a driver yet. He is a walker, which certainly lends to his lanky physique. He's a kid that you look at and know for sure that he has katanas hanging on his wall somewhere in his house. He doesn't, because that's not his culture, not his religion, but he looks like that kid. Like that kid that's like, oh yeah, you hang out at the Asian grocery store and eat pocky like it's a personality.
Maybe wears a fedora unironically.
I don't know that he's that far, but it's close. It's close.
Okay, so you're walking home. Are you taking the bus?
So I think he took off in a fit of adrenaline. He would jog most of the way home before he realized. And so I think he would show up later than he realized, dog tired from hoofing it the whole way. Half because he's so intent on his purpose, and half because as soon as he got out of the like sphere of the school and the streetlights, he had a moment of panic of like, I've just run off into the darkness. That was not a big brain move. I'm going to get eaten. So certainly a lightness in his step as he traverses the town.
Okay. After jogging a small marathon, you make your way up to the front door of your home. Where are you going?
So what time is it?
We will say it is approaching 9:30.
Okay, so still relatively early. I am going to go to my father's study, where he almost certainly is.
He is.
And I will not burst through the door, because I could never, but I will certainly enter it with more vigor than I ever have before. I will push open the door, and I'm, which I'm sure catches my father's attention in a negative way. And as soon as I know his eyes are on me, I don't want to even wait for him to speak, which is, again, very uncharacteristic for Crispin. And I will just say, Father, I need your help.
At first, he has a look of anger, and you can see the thoughts behind his eyes that are reading, this had better be good. But then when you say, I need your help, there's a look of stoicism. It's almost like the visage of a soldier just kind of drops over his frame. What do you need?
I will straighten my spine. This, I think, is the first time I have willingly been in Father's study and ever asked him for anything resembling help. So this is uncharted territory for Crispin. And I'm going to look him square in the eye and say, Father, there was evil done on school grounds tonight. And I tell him about the research I did, how I believe that there is a demon or an evil named Fenrir that has sought to spread evil through our town. Father, I can't fight this on my own. I need your assistance. I need your wisdom. What can we do?
Give me a keep your cool.
That's a 9.
So you realize halfway through your rambling that you have put yourself smack dab in a situation in which you were exposed to said evil in a place that he had objections to in the first place. So by asking his help, he may decide that part of that help is you being homeschooled again. Do you wish to continue?
I'm in it now. I can't really take back everything I just said.
He listens without saying a word. And when you finish, he stands. He opens that cabinet to reveal his club, takes it down, and opens up a drawer that was kind of concealed and pulls out a second club. This was to be presented to you tomorrow for your vigil. But in the light of this evil you speak of, I think it best that you be armed to take on this evil. And he will reverently present it to you. This club is a newer, more polished version of his, and it has one extra pip.
I take it, and I regard that extra pip and run my thumb over it. And I know that it represents me. That is my generation of the family. This is a day that I've known would come since I was tiny, but the fact that it's here still doesn't feel real. And so I grip it tightly in both hands. I look at my dad and I just say, "You've told me all my life that our purpose on Earth was to combat evil. And I don't know that I understood until tonight that you meant that literally." And Crispin's mind wanders back to that day across the street from the playground, the fight, the first time he saw a dead body. And he gets the sense for the first time in his life, I think, that there might be more to what his father has been shoving down his throat than just fanaticism. That it's more than just picket lines and internet trolling and weird rituals on a Saturday morning. That maybe there is something his dad knows that he doesn't. And I think that's the first time he's ever considered that it might be real.
As a matter of mechanics, is this you coming in contact with the dragon?
Yes.
So I get to give you a condition. And based on what you've expressed, I'm giving you the condition, drank the Kool-Aid.
Can it please be drank the Flavor-Aid, though?
Yes. Drank the Flavor-Aid. Is there an issue with Kool-Aid, or is it just because it's the brand?
No, it's just the brand that they had at Jonestown was Flavor-Aid.
Oh.
That's me being a true crime nerd right there.
Wow. Okay. Drank the Flavor-Aid. Oof. You have never seen this look come over your father's face ever before. This is completely new to you. It is a look of pride. He gives your shoulder a squeeze.
"We will hunt this thing. We will bring judgment to that evil. Then we need to re-examine your place there. I will not have them threatening my boy."
"No, Father, you don't understand. I know that you and Mother and Father Miller and Dr. Miller have only wanted what was best for me, and you sent me to that school so I could learn the ways of the world, but I think that maybe this was divine providence. I am where God wants me. I was put there to serve and to protect these people and to show them that there is a way out of the wickedness."
You see the wheels turning as he tries to rationalize that.
"We shall discuss it further once we have dealt with this thing that you speak of."
"Of course, Father."
He grabs his keys and leads you to the car.
"What about Mother? Is she safe to leave alone?"
"God will protect her."
Crispin doesn't like that, but I think he's going to get in the car anyway. Like, I think he kind of drags his feet a little bit and kind of glances backward at the house, but... Oh, Dad.
Thank you for listening to this episode of All Our Faults. Thank you to the Tabletop Tailspinners Network and director Emma Kokar for giving us a home. A shout out to our social media crier, Juicy Garland. You can find our cast out in the wild socials. Abby Marie Carter is at Abby_Marie_Carter. Ben is at DJ_Blindian. Juicy Garland is at Juicy Garland. Kat Kelly is at Kat Kelly Social. And myself, Mistress Winter, at G Winter. If you like this show, there are plenty of ways to support us. First and foremost, share this awesome story with your friends. It is a lot more fun to theorize about what's going to happen as a group. You can also support us financially on our Ko-fi site. Become a member and get some cool bonus content. Until next time, keep your lives feral and your heart safe.
This is completely new to you. It is a look of pride.
My dad loves me, you guys. I love you too, Daddy. It's all I've ever wanted. No, horrifying. If Crispin was like that, I would kill myself. I'm like, no, we're not doing that.
Oh, boy.
That's fine. I'm sorry. Continue telling your story. I'll be quiet now. I'm sorry.
This has been a tale from the Tabletop Tailspinners Network.